The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
Let's go!
Toss to White. He's in. Patriots win the Super Bowl. Brady has his fifth. What a comeback.
Watson. Touchdown. Hunter Renfro. Little man makes another enormous play. 1 second remaining.
Ladies and gentlemen, football to the max.
Your host, Sean Garmer, Gary Vaughn, and Randy Isbell.
Hello and welcome to a Football to the Max Extra. I did kind of hint that this might happen, and it has happened, but we're not going to just talk about the one thing that I said we might. There's more news that came out today, so we might as well talk about it since we're here. And we have the full panel here today to mainly discuss the Ezekiel Elliott suspension of 6 games handed down by the NFL earlier today. So there's that. There's also the big Sammy Watkins. Well, I don't know how really big it is, but we can discuss how big it is. Sammy Watkins trade to the Los Angeles Rams. Then subsequently, Jordan Matthews gets traded from the Eagles to the Buffalo Bills for a corner, Mr. Darby. And yeah, and then we also have Ryan Tannehill officially getting the ACL surgery and ending his season, leaving that door wide open for the quarterback battle between Matt Moore and Jay Cutler. So, of course, if this is your first time listening, I'm your host, Sean Garmer, and here with me is my two awesome co-hosts, Mr. Gary Vaughn.
Hey, guys.
And Eric Watkins.
Broadcasting live from my tablet.
And you sound good from your tablet, so perhaps this might be the official destination of you podcasting from in the future. But, you know, guys, this has been an ongoing saga for about 13 months now. It has finally come to an end. The NFL decided to suspend Ezekiel Elliott 6 games, not only for the physical violence against a woman, but also for the incident at a St. Patrick's Day parade in which he grabbed a woman's shirt and she ended up flashing her boob at people. And the league is pretty much saying in this letter, sort of saying that there's a pattern going on here, that and it's against women and it's not very conducive to what the league wants. So this is sort of a, you know, part of it is the violence, which mitigates a minimum 6-game suspension, but also the just kind of trying to let him know, like, hey, you need to get it together, man. You needed to get it together. So I want to preface this by saying, if this is the first time you're listening, Gary and I are both Dallas Cowboys fans. So we're going to try to take the Dallas Cowboys fandom away from this and try to be as impartial as we possibly can, mainly trying to be objective for this podcast. Eric is a Jaguars and Dolphins fan, so he doesn't have any kind of partiality here. So he'll be very helpful in this. But Gary, I'm going to go to you first here. I mean, obviously, hearing this, not very good for the Cowboys in any form or fashion. But do you feel like the 6 games is too much?
Let me first say this. you know, you mentioned we're Cowboy fans, and I do want people to know I'm going to be impartial on this. I really will be. First of all, because I don't think that Ezekiel Elliott makes up the entire freaking offense of the Dallas Cowboys, to be honest with
he
you.
He makes up a large part of it.
Well, to an extent, because, I mean, when he was out at certain times during the season, when they had him on the bench, you know, a fourth of the time, a third of the time, they had other guys taking the job and doing fine. McFadden, Morris, those guys did fine. It's not, I'm not saying that they're not going to lack something. They will. I'm just saying I don't think that, you know, these guys are immediately going to lose six games off the bat because Ezekiel Elliott's not there. So I'm not going to come into this saying our world is crashing down. I'm just going to come at this as impartial as I can and look at this objectively.
But that's okay, you know, to also say that the Cowboys' world does come crashing down a bit because it changes what the Cowboys do offensively. Who they have there, what Dak has to do now, Dak Prescott, and it intensifies the possible issues that are there on the offensive line as well. But we'll get into the football side of it in a little bit. Let's talk about the legal side for a second.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that. I just want, you know, the reason I'm prefacing that is because you're kind of going against me here, because I'm trying to tell people the honest truth is I don't think this is the end of the world. So I'm not going to say Elliott's innocent because of this, or I'm thinking he's guilty because of that, because I want my Cowboys to do good. It's whatever. I'm okay with this, honestly. Here's the thing. Allegedly, and Sean didn't say that, but I'm going to say it. Allegedly, the domestic violence situation with this young lady that took place, you know, in 2016 – went down. That's something that the league has come out and really tried to grab onto. There's not really anything to grab onto but rumors, hearsay, and things that really, let's be honest, cannot be proven in a court of law. So it's really hard for me to grasp. The incident with the St. Patrick's Day annual showing a little bit of nudity there, that's not alleged. That happened. That's on camera. We can prove that. I think that that makes sense. The NFL has every right to be upset about that. Now, is that worth a lot of suspension, you know, time? I don't think so. But it is worth a look. It's worth definitely a fine. I think he should be fined for
that. We do have to remember, though, when you look at these two things together, and how many of these commercials do we see now with the – we got to think about this from the league's perspective, sponsors, everything else. How many commercials now? Football is family. The women are walking around with their daughters and sons going to get clothes, going to get the jerseys. I mean, you got to think about it like that. They are thinking about how this looks to them as a league. If you're saying, oh, we're just going to give them a little slap on the wrist because of – look, at the end of the day, if we're looking at this like that show on the boob thing – to the common person, to us, like, it's not really a big deal, right? Like, but to a big company like that, they're going to take it like a bigger deal. So then you're looking at these two things together, and I can kind of see what they're saying, like, oh, well, you know, there's something going on here.
And I get where you're coming from on that, and you know, I'm not the bad guy here. I'm not defending that. I didn't defend it just now. I didn't say that was okay at all for any reason. I'm just setting the stage right now for you from my perspective. And the stage is yes, one thing he did definitely deserves some punishment. I mean, if you just got to prove a point, just suspending for a game there. You know, say, look, you shouldn't do that. I know that this is, you know, 2017. Everybody has a phone that streams live on the internet anytime they want to do it. So sorry, guy, you can't be a rock star. It doesn't work today. In the 1970s, guys did 100 times worse, and they got away with it. You can't. So maybe you suspend him for a game, maybe two for something like that. But even that's kind of touchy-go. I get the league's image, and this is what this is all about. The league is setting a precedent with Ezekiel Elliott. This is a guy that they consider one of the poster childs of a new generation of superstars, right? This is the reason why they had a problem with Johnny Manziel and the way he acted, which I get that too. And different players that have come along. You're not seeing this happen to a guy that's a third string player on the Dallas Cowboys, on the Buffalo Bills, because honestly, no one would really care. You know, who cares if a guy that's a third string guy gets suspended for six games.
Hell, the Cowboys would probably release him.
Yeah, exactly. And most teams would, and that's the point here. This is a primetime guy. This is the leader in rushing last year. So they're making a point here. They did the thing to Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell's been in trouble. He got suspended 4 games last year, right? So they're making a big deal about these big-name players, and I don't have a problem with it as long as it's proven, as long as there's some background on this that actually has evidence that is worthy of being shown. And I have my own problems with the league's evidence here. You pointed out, Sean, about the young lady with during the parade. They also have some, you know, rumors and some things going down in the nightclub where he knocked a guy out.
Yeah, but they don't even mention the nightclub stuff here. Kind of
added up. No, and they don't, and I'm a little surprised they don't. I just think right now they're trying to say, look, Zeke Elliott is in the news for all the wrong reasons. He's supposed to be one of our bigger stars. We've got to stop this now. So we're going to give him a big suspension, and we're going to hang our hats on something that's really not it's a really alleged stuff, but we're going to have to hang our hat on it because it's the only thing we got, and so we're going to do it. And is that great? I don't think so, but that's just my personal opinion, and I'll get more into that. But that's just my look at this, is the league is doing something for themselves and just for themselves, and they're hanging their hat on something that's not all proven and all true.
Okay, I would say that, just to be fair, they do have – now, look, this may not hold up in a court of law or whatever, but they do have pictures of things that show she got hit, or it may not have been by – it may have not resulted in well, however they're trying to portray this, and there is a situation where she did lie about an incident, and there was an affidavit out there with a witness saying that, you know, there was never an incident where he pulled her out of a car and beat her. But these other incidents, they don't have anything that say anything against them, but they don't have anything proving one way or the other. They're there in perpetuity, as far as it depends on if the Columbus Police Department would have decided to take it further. And we have seen this many times, and there's been many times where we don't see this at all, with women that the state just says, you know what, we're taking the case. You don't even get the option of saying no. We're taking this case. And then it goes to the judge, and they go, oh, yes, or oh, no. Here, we have to remember also that this is in Columbus, where Ezekiel Elliott played college football at a very high level for Ohio State, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, college football team in the land. So, you know, is there something that perhaps the Ohio, you know, the Columbus Police Department could have done more to perhaps go one way or the other? Maybe. But at this point, they don't have anything from the legal side saying that He was never charged anything, so the NFL is doing their thing. Now, I want to bring this up, Eric, because this is brought up many times in other articles that are written about this. The NFL is obviously trying to protect itself from having a Ray Rice situation again. And there is also a precedent. Now, this is different because this had a lot more evidence leaning towards yes than no. In fact, causing the owner... And I'm talking about Ben Roethlisberger when he had his case. And they didn't have anything. He was never charged. But the owner came out and said, look, because I think also, if I remember right, Roethlisberger had also been involved in several other things that were kind of mounting for him as far as off-the-field problems. And the owner might have said, you know what? If you're not going to do something, NFL, I'm going to do something because I'm tired of him being in this situation. Now, here's another case where there's nothing legal that says Ezekiel Elliott has done something where we would put him in jail or make him pay a fine or anything like that, but the NFL has decided that they're going to do something to take preventive action or to take action to make him understand that this is not something that we are okay with in the NFL. Do you see this as the NFL not only trying to protect themselves, but sort of just taking that power to say, hey, if you guys think that this is something that needs to be done. Everybody else, here's the guy that's taking the penalty. Much like, you know, Tom Brady again. You know, here you go.
Right. And I want to say this, throwing out a couple facts and figures. We all know that the NFL is a corporate entity. A very large, multi-billion dollar corporate entity. Roger Goodell himself said on record that by 2024, he wants revenue to be $30 billion a year. I believe they're at like the 12 range now. That's one aspect. Everybody talks about the shield. Is this the first time the NFL has had image problems? No. I keep referencing way back in the 60s where you had different issues with players. You had a huge gambling scandal that swept over a lot of powerful teams back then. And the NFL realized, okay, we have to do things to clean up certain image problems. They're going through the same thing again today. And you brought this up with the footballers' family, the women with their children going and buying the jerseys. That is a huge factor. If anybody, and all it would take is a handful of people starting a movement, getting something viral on social media, next thing you know, the NFL is hearing the word boycott. Granted, they would survive, but they don't even want to take that hit. They don't want to get that ball rolling. So they figure to themselves, okay, Ezekiel Elliott, you're a very good player. You're a talented player. We want to make you one of the premier faces of this league. You want to do that. We want to do that. All of these things can't happen. So we, with our corporate mindset, looking out for ourselves and what you can get reaping these benefits, this has got to happen now. This sends that same message to any players coming up. Other players in the league, like Gary, you had mentioned Le'Veon Bell. Another one who could be a potential face and a current face. You've got things to worry about. We're going to shut you down. Now, I think the reason why the NFL is exercising this power, not just because of the image, not just because they're trying to clean up for Ray Rice, you brought up a very good point. With Roethlisberger, with his incidents, the motorcycle accident, his issues and public incidences involving women, they have a solid ownership group that's saying, okay, we are wanting to nip this in the bud for you, not just for the better of the league, but for the better of our team and our player. Jerry Jones, in interesting timing with all of this, because of his Hall of Fame induction, said, they've got nothing. We've got nothing. There's nothing there. We're just going to go on about our business. Now, you would appreciate your owners protecting and defending your players, but if you're drawing that definitive of a line, Roger Goodell and everybody in the front office is saying, okay, we're not going to get anything from you. If there's something there, we have to take this upon ourselves. We've already been through this. We've had to set precedent because of all these things, X, Y, Z. Now we have to live up to it.
Yeah. You're not wrong about that at all. And I understand that too, because, you know, Jerry Jones, you just mentioned him, he's mm-hmm. very much a guy that loves his players, and he gets to be one of those owners that really honestly gets really close to those guys, and that's to a fault as well. We've seen some of the downfall of the Dallas Cowboys over the time being he's held on to players that really honestly didn't belong in the roles that they were in and actually getting paid.
What was the name of that player that he made this whole big charade about, and he was in that car accident with the other guy.
Oh, the teammate?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now, oh my goodness, now you're saying his name.
And, like, he had him be on the sideline and everything else. And
Benson. It was
Yeah.
Benson.
Yeah. And then he never really became anything. And it was mainly to honor the person that's lost, his family, because he didn't want anything to happen to, he didn't want Benson to be treated badly. But like, that shows how much Jerry cares about his players, that he would go that far to keep a player on the team and make him feel like he's warranted. And, you know, the thing is, too, let's look at it this way. First of all, I want to say that we got to remember that at least the league, for all we want to say about the league was taking too long and all this stuff, at least they took too long and did something. They actually interviewed Ezekiel Elliott, so they weren't just going off of what she said, right? He also came in there, represented himself, talked. And they still went with whatever they chose. But if you're saying Ezekiel Elliott has a problem, right? If you're saying he has a pattern of stuff, making him be by himself for 6 games without the team and your teammates, your friends, isn't that bad for him? Right? You're leaving him leaving him to his own devices for 6 games. Doesn't that kind of let him be out there to do something like this again? Instead of letting him be around the team where maybe that doesn't happen?
And I got to say thank you for bringing that up, because I think this is something the league really needs to investigate. And I'm not saying allow the guys maybe to get on the field. Maybe you're punishing him from, you know, practicing.
No, but what's funny, Gary, is that apparently if you – the substance abuse – they allow you to be around the team. Yeah. But anything else, you're not allowed to be around the team. That seems – I understand the substance abuse thing because, again, substance abuse. But it's like it should be the same. Like, why can't you not be around the team if you did PEDs? Like, what's the big deal?
I don't know. Here's the thing, though. I don't know if that's all the truth. If that's true, then Randy Gregory got soured on something, because – I remember distinctly Randy Gregory, Dallas Cowboy as well, can't stay away from marijuana, got suspended for 6 games last year, I think it was, and he was a guy that was not allowed to be around his teammates. In fact, that was the big argument, was he couldn't be around the facility, he couldn't be near anyone, and guess what?
I think after like the first one, that might be more of an aggravated
thing. Maybe so. Yeah, maybe you're right on that, and that could be the case. I don't know I don't have the.
I mean, I heard that today on with the Cowboys. I don't know if maybe he was wrong about that. So maybe I'm talking out of the, and all the penalties carry that. But
here's the thing. I just what matters here is your point, and your point is very, very valid. Taking a guy away from his teammates and basically singling him out, putting him to the side, and letting him think about it. Sounds very great and dandy to the league, but these guys are not 3-year-olds. They don't go to the room and then learn their lesson and come out and say, I'm sorry, guys, I learned from this. No, what they do is they go to their, you know, mansion or their expensive homes, and they're getting their car and they hang out with their friends who they probably got in trouble with in the first place and spend all their time with them because they're not allowed to go to work. You know, and that's the deal. You don't do that. If nothing else, you regulate these guys to spend time at the facility. Tell them, hey, you can't practice. You can't go do the things that you want to do, but you have to be at the facility. You have to be around your coaches and the teammates, and you have to sit there and watch them work hard, watch them win games or lose games because of your actions, and make them feel it. You know, don't let them go out and do their own things, and that's a big deal to me. Like, you know, you got Ezekiel Elliott here, a guy that's obviously having trouble off the field, a guy that's obviously can't control himself. He feels like a rock star.
I just want to point this out, so because I'm sure if we have people listening, they're going to be like, but he is, yes, in the preseason, he's allowed to do everything. Yep. But if all this was happening in the regular season, he couldn't.
Yep, all of these penalties are regular season only. And Gary actually brings up a valid point. You have these guys, they're adults, they've got money, they've got means, they've got popularity. They have a run of a lot of places. And then if they're not at work, at the facility doing all these things, then they're more likely to get in even more trouble. And I'm curious because there's going to be an appeal process, which Roger Goodell will overhear. He'll oversee that whole thing. And even if on the chance that this suspension is reduced, once you hit the end of preseason, everything goes into effect. So you're talking about at minimum a month, possibly, of Ezekiel Elliott with free reign. We've seen the kind of incidents he gets into when he has free reign. I would think that these are the kind of processes, along with a couple of other things in the works, are being looked at now by the players' union. So that way they can get a head start on negotiations and making some what could be critical changes in the next CBA coming up in a couple of years.
I will say that they do have that clause in there that says if he commits anything else, there's going to be an even bigger suspension, perhaps even banishment from the league, depending on what it is, right? Mm-hmm. So, yes. Obviously, that's supposed to be a scare tactic in that, very much like when you're on probation from the law. Like, the worst thing you can do when you're on probation is pick up another charge. So, that's sort of what this is.
Right, but at the same time, at least when you're on probation, you can at least establish some sort of support system to avoid those incidences of recidivism. When you're in the NFL, your main support system is your teammates or your coaches. Those are your people. And the NFL is saying for variety of instances, you can't be around that support system. That's tough.
Can he can see them away from the practice field, though, right? Like, he go to their house. And
yeah, but that would be up to him and his teammates, right? And you'd have to trust that that relationship would keep going on whatever in these six games. It's just you can't really always rely on the players to do that. They got their own lives. You know, some of these guys, you know, they got other things they got going. They work all day. You know, they go practice.
And some of these guys are going to be mad about this, right? Because, again, this affects the team very much so.
You think about guys like Jason Witten, a huge leader for the Dallas Cowboys, a guy other than what we had with Tony Romo, who desperately would love to get to the promised land because his career is winding down. He's not getting younger. His back's not getting any, you know, healthier, and his legs aren't getting healthier. He's digressing as normal life and players do over time. And this is his opportunity. And, you know, Ezekiel Elliott doing his thing and making bad decisions has affected his team, has affected his chances of getting to the promised land of a Super Bowl. And that's not making him happy, I'm sure. And I'm sure a lot of these other guys in the organization are not thrilled about this situation. And so they're going to have a little bit of a problem with this. They're probably mad at the league, too, but they're probably just as upset with Ezekiel for putting him in this situation. So it causes those little rifts and those little problems, but that's when you got to have good leaders to come in and fix that stuff. But yeah, it's definitely not a good, you know, thing when you have guys like this also isolated, like Eric's bringing up here. I think that's got to be something that's looked at. I think the CBA agreement's going to be changed up a little bit. It's got to. I think Goodell's power is way too much, and I also think that some of the things that the NFL has implemented have really hurt the players themselves because of the league's thought processes, and some of those are just a little bit wonky.
I will say I commend them for having that four-person panel and everything else that was made up of a former player, two legal people, two very big legal people as far as, you know, what they used to do. One of them used to be the former United States attorney and former chair of the new secretary, the SEC. So, you know, that's nothing to scoff at there. And then you also had a chief executive officer of the Women of Color Network, too, on there. So they had a diverse panel. I think that's all good that they're starting to do this, right? But at the end of the day, the worst part, I think, in this is that why is the guy that's handing down the suspension also the guy that hears the appeal? Like, where is that okay And in any other sort of setting, this wouldn't happen. You'd have to have a separate person that has nothing to do with the league hearing this so that it's actually fair when you come in and look at all the evidence and go, oh, well, the league's wrong here. Well, no, but you can't do that with the other guy that's apparently supposed to be doing this with Goodell has also worked for the league before.
Yeah, and go back to the last CBA negotiations where there was, thankfully, preseason, but there was a work stoppage. It got to the point to where instead of both sides digging in their heels and getting in items of fairness, especially fairness for the players, they just wanted the season to start. Be it players not wanting to miss games, not wanting to miss money, the league and their own ideals, what have you. That's a debate that will probably rage until we are long in our grave. But because that situation, because for timing-wise, negotiations got to that point, everyone just kind of broke down and said, okay, we'll do whatever, accept whatever, we need to get on the field. The league, more than anybody, took advantage of that, and that's how you have this in place now.
I just don't understand that. Like, how big of an ego do you have to have to not understand that that's just wrong?
Oh, trust me. I've covered other leagues where commissioners, while still in office, have trophies named after them. So... You, to be in this kind of a position, and when you're making upwards of $40 to $50 million a year, you're gonna have a big head. You're gonna use that big head. This is what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I really feel like, you know, that's a proven, you know, entity, and what it happens when you get commissioners having a lot of power. And I think the NFL is kind of dealing with that too. And I'm sure they don't feel like they're the problem. They feel like that they're golden. You know, they kind of won the CBA war this last, you know, agreement. And I think that they're going to feel like they're going to own the next one. But, you know, they've got to change up some things because of that. And power is great, but it's also something that can screw you up because of, you know, the thought processes you have are not always right. And so I think that maybe finding an independent source, now finding that independent source is going to be difficult, because who can you trust to make, you know, those secondary decisions? You know, you could always go get a guy like Sepp Blatter to make, you know.
God. Oh, God. Gary, come on. You have now stained this conversation. Like, what's wrong?
I'm kidding.
Dagger to the heart right now.
I'm sorry. No, that's the problem, honestly. You really do, in all seriousness, have to find someone else who can be independently, you know, thinking and also independently associated with this world of sports to make these kind of decisions when you don't have the commissioner being able to make them. Maybe you have to have that secondary conversation that, you know, needs to be done, honestly. It needs to be there, and for not only the players, but for the league. I think sometimes you got to protect the league from the league.
Yeah.
You really do. But as the saying goes, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And while I kind of don't want to see any disaster in the seasons leading up to when the CBA will be negotiations will begin, if something happens, which we could be teetering towards, that would force a lot of different hands.
So to get to I want to continue that point, but just want to say that Ezekiel Elliott's people and himself, they've already filed the appeal. His legal team says that the NFL's findings are replete with factual inaccuracies and erroneous conclusions, and it cherry-picks so-called evidence to support its conclusion while ignoring other critical evidence, and that they pretty much say that during this arbitration and time that they're going to take for this appeal, they're going to show more evidence that's going to be combating whatever the league has. So this is going to be interesting, as it's going to be heard before week one. Probably means he might wind up playing in that game against the Giants, at least. And then, you know, after that, it becomes about what's going on with the appeal. But either way, to go back to your point that you were, I just wanted to put it out there that the appeal's already been done. Ezekiel Elliott apologized to everybody. He says he also disagrees with the findings, as you would expect. This whole thing with Goodell having all this power and everything, isn't it also on the NFLPA to do a little bit more? Right? Like, you can't just send letters and think that that does something. You got to be out there, like, supporting him, saying, look, this is the side that we take. We are with the player. We are against this. We don't agree with what the league has handed down. And you really need to be there in the forefront for him instead of, and this goes for all the other players. Now, some of these are really bad, and, you know, the NFL and PA just has to go along with what's being said. But in situations like this, and the one with Tom Brady and all that, like, just sending letters and having written correspondence, I think is kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of weak from the NFLPA. Like, they need to do more. And I hope that, do you guys think that we might see the NFLPA do more in this case? And let's say that most times when they go to the appeal, the suspension goes down, right? But do you think that Elliott says, look, this is going to tarnish my reputation? And it is. And it's already has been. And there's going to be, whether, even if he gets off completely, there's still going to be people that are going to go on the other side and think that everybody was hiding something and that he really did this and whatever. You know, there's going to be people that feel that way. He says, I want to do what Tom Brady did. I want to go to court. Do you think that goes that far?
Personally, no. I mean, I would love to see the NFLPA do more, but I'm looking at myself with the way things are negotiated, what can they really do? And then if you go to court, be it whatever setting, okay, what's going to happen in all of this with the disclosure? You already, as you said, have people that are going to feel that this is tarnishing his reputation now. This keeps going on and on and on. That would just make things worse. Public opinion is very, very fickle when it comes to these sorts of things.
Right, but if the judge says, look, you don't have enough evidence here, this is dumb, like, I'm throwing this out. I mean, isn't what matters at the end of the day, whether he gets vilified or not, that's not what matters. What matters is whether he gets suspended or not. The people are going to think what they want to think.
Yeah.
Yeah, and again, people are going to keep thinking what they're going to think, whether he gets suspended or not. Once you have your initial image throughout the minds of the public, no matter what you do the rest of your career or the rest of your life, you are judged based upon that initial image. I've seen it time and time and again. If you set the bar low, you could go out and wreak havoc. Everybody will say, oh, that's just you being you. But if you set the bar high and then you get into any whiff of trouble, that's going to turn you in most people's eyes. How much varies from person to person, but it will still be turned.
Yeah, in the court of public opinion, especially when it comes to the Dallas Cowboys, just as it comes with even the New England Patriots, you know, you see the way Tom Brady was treated from fans, you know, that they really got behind him and really said, dude, you know, just leave him alone. This guy's okay. And then, of course, you know, you had the other guys, you know, out there saying, like, you know, it's obvious he's a cheater, just like his head coach. They just cheat, 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 and just continue to do it. And now, you know, you got the same situation with Ezekiel Elliott, and you got other players. I mean, we had the whole fiasco with Joe Mixon, you know, talking about him and other players in this situation. And the court of public opinion is always going to be there. They're always going to make their determinations. I think you're right, Eric. I think the longer this stays in the limelight, as long as it's about a Dallas Cowboy or anybody like a New York Yankee or anybody like that, they're going to be talking about it every night, and it's going to be a big deal. They're going to step by step. It's going to be there in front of our faces, and we'll never get away from it until it all ends. And I think the sooner it goes away, the sooner we can live our lives and hopefully, you know, just see this guy as a player, just kind of like we wanted to do with Tom Brady. We want to see Tom Brady as a player. If you hate him, you love him, you got to respect him for what he's done. And I think Elliott's got to earn that same respect from people now, especially after all this trouble. So it's a problem. I agree. And I look at it too as a situation where, you know, you would think that maybe Ezekiel Elliott would go to court and put this in the judge's hands and say, look, you know, the league is bringing all this stuff up. They're trying to hurt me because of, you know, what they think is true, but I'm going to give you what I have. I don't know. I don't know if that works out the way he wants it or maybe the way the league, you know, wants it. But in the end, I could see it or doing that or not doing that. But, you know, who knows? My biggest problem with this whole thing, especially when we've talked about power with Goodell and all, is the fact that the league has the opportunity to investigate for so long. I mean, my God, this has been going on over a year, and the league is investigating and investigating and investigating, and they have all this time, and then they put it back in the hands of the player and the Players Association to prove it wrong in a very limited amount of time. And I don't think that the really honestly is the right way to do it. I think the league has to be mandated on the how long they can investigate something and how long they have to make a decision on a player's future. I think that's a big problem too. It's a big distraction for the team.
Yeah, it is a big distraction for the team. And not just from that side, also because of the situation, Ezekiel Elliott wasn't made available to the media at all during preseason. Mm-hmm. And that's the other takeaway that I forgot to bring out about why, even if you were allowed to be with the team, depending on the situation. Now, the one with Zeke might be different than, say, you know, the one with,
Randy Gregory?
Yes, the one with Randy Gregory, or the one with, the guy that was here, I just said his name before, and I can't think of it.
Oh, Hardy?
Yeah, and even the Zeke one, I think, is also because it depends on who's talking to him, right? It may be a distraction in that now everybody just flocks to Zeke or Hardy or whoever, and they don't care about the rest of the team. And that causes a problem for Jerry Jones, for Jason Garrett, for everybody. So they go, you know what, maybe it's better if he's not here. And so you still have that situation about whether he's there or not there because the media's not going to leave him alone. Unless they somehow tell everybody, like, there is no way we're letting you talk to him. Just leave him alone. If we see you talking to him, we're going to kick you out of here. And then that's the discretion of the reporter as to, you know, whether they want to lose their, you know, credentials or whatever. But, you know, the thing is, this is a huge distraction not only off the field, but the big distraction is on the field. And we haven't talked about that yet, and we should probably get into because we've already been talking about this for 40 minutes. And we still got to talk about this sort of three-team trade that wasn't a three-team trade that happened today. So on the field, let's say Ezekiel Elliott is suspended anywhere from 4 to 6 games, period. End of story. Let's leave it there because if we do any less, it's going to be too much finagling and whatever. The bottom line is, now it's between Alfred Morris, Darren McFadden, Rod Smith, and Ronnie Hillman to try to figure out what the pecking order is, how you're going to do this. The good thing is, you have the rest of the preseason, including the game that happens on Saturday, to start figuring out where you want this order to be, who's, and everything else. And these guys now have extra motivation, right? Because they now know that whoever wins out here, you're going to be the number one running back. you know, barring that somehow Zeke just gets completely off, which is probably not happening. So, you know, I'll go to you, Gary, first, obviously, since we're a bit more connected to the team here. Do you feel like there is a, okay, here's a guy you can put in and he takes most of the snaps, or is it a committee thing and you got to just divvy it up between three or four guys or whatever?
What's interesting is the Dallas Cowboys are not going to implement what they may have done this year, especially with the suspension, especially if it is the full six games. They were going to look at maybe giving Elliott more of the control of the backfield, where last year he was a rookie. They didn't want to run him into the ground because they knew, you know, rookies don't always, you know, do very well at the end of the year because their season usually is over in December. So I think, you know, this year they're not going to possibly get a chance to make him that, you know, full-time leader in the backfield. But I think now that they're going to be dealing with Darren McFadden, an older player, they got Alfred Morris, you know, not a spring chicken himself, but not too old. I think they are going to go a little bit more committee. I feel like that's probably the best option for him. I think Darren McFadden will be more of the featured back in that situation because they trust him to be more versatile when it comes to blocking, pass catching, and, of course, all the other duties. Whereas I think some of these other guys in that backfield are good, but Alfred Morris is not as well-rounded. And of course, Rod Smith has got his limitations as a young player as well. So I could definitely see it being a committee, but I think you will have Darren McFadden being a little bit more of the guy getting control of the backfield.
I'm going to counter that by saying that I think Alfred Morris is actually the guy that stands the chance to win here if he plays well in the preseason, because he's the kind of guy that we've seen him have success with Washington. And I feel like the reason why he doesn't do so well, and I'm not going to say this is an original thought of mine, but I agree with it, is that he's more of used to being a guy that gets a lot of carries. And he's used to being that number one guy. So it takes him a little while to get going. Whereas McFadden is kind of used to, yes, he had that year where he was sort of the lead back, but he's used to, oh, I might go out there for the pass, or I might only be down here for a third down, and I got to make the most of it, so I got to get my 5 yards or my 10 yards or whatever. Whereas Alfred Morris needs like 15, 20 carries to get going, and he might have that opportunity if, say, you go, okay, well, Alfred Morris was starting back. Darren McFadden's the third down back because Alfred Morris doesn't catch passes. Or let's say McFadden has some issues. Ronnie Hillman also can do that, and you kind of switch Hillman and McFadden out, depending on what you need the either one to do. So for me, I feel like Morris could be the lead guy now, because now if for these six games you do not have a lead running back, you still need a guy to get 15, 20 carries or even more, because you don't want to have to do what I'm about to ask you, Eric. You're still looking at a second-year quarterback in Dak Prescott, who's now starting to learn more of the offense, have more of that put into his ears and his mind about what am I opening up here? Well, obviously, some of those things that you wanted to open up involved Ezekiel Elliott, and now he's not there for six games. This changes what you want to do offensively, but you still need to take that pressure off of him, right?
Well, you still do, and I think the one benefit and why I am agreeing with you that I think Alfred Morris will be the lead guy, but that's because if the offensive line can even come close to what they did last year and what they've been capable the past couple of years, you're not going to ask Alfred Morris to do a lot of blocking, and you can feature McFadden more as that third down back. Now, as you have him as a second-year quarterback, as he's learning more of that offense, he's got more film against him. He's got a whole extra year that teams are able to now game plan his tendencies against him. So you can't ask him to do a whole tremendous lot, because those opposing defenses are going to easily be able to step up and say, hey, they're relying on him. We can now focus on shutting him down. Look at what the Giants were able to do in both games just last season with him as a rookie. The fact that they're going to face him week one, that's an even bigger advantage. So there's going to be a few extra layers of tweaks because of that. Again, I'm with you. I think Morris would be a better fit. So that way you decrease the amount of extra pressure you have on Dak. Maybe they listen, but that's why I'm here and not in Oxnard right now.
No, I don't disagree with you guys on Alfred Morris. I'm a huge fan of Alfred Morris. When the Dallas Cowboys signed him, I was over the moon. I loved him when he played for the Washington Redskins. I thought the world of him. I was a little bit like dumbfounded when the Redskins couldn't find a way to use him. I just made no sense. And then when the Dallas Cowboys all of a sudden couldn't find a way to use him, it just blows my mind. And I get
it. But that's on him too, though, right?
Well, like, it is, yeah, but that's my point is he's worked on a few things. He's worked on pass catching this offseason. He's worked on a few other things, and I love the energy that he brings. We saw it last year several times, especially when they played the Washington Redskins. He really had a fire underneath him, you know, and that's what's so fun about him. I think that he's got something that's really needed, and that's a guy that's going to go headfirst into that defense and power through and basically be their power runner, where Darren McFadden's not going to be that guy. He's going to be more of that, you know, finesse guy, you know, get around the corner, hopefully outrun a few people and do those type of things. So I hope you guys are right. I would love to see Alfred Morris, the featured guy, while Elliott's not around, but I don't know if I believe the Dallas Cowboys are in agreement with you two guys. In fact, it amazes me watching a little bit of training camp. They love this Rod Smith kid. I don't understand their fascination with Rod Smith, but they love him. They're almost already penciled him in as the first player on their roster. I'm surprised they haven't sent the league papers saying, hey, we're going to go ahead and name our one guy out of 53 this year, Rod Smith. And I don't get it. But it's just the way they're doing it. And the way
and also their love for McFadden, too.
Yeah,
just
that's
based on that one season.
Yeah, it just amazes me. But I hope you guys are right. I would love to see Alfred Morris a part of this team this year. I keep hearing they want to trade the guy away. Who knows?
Yeah, and that's another thing. Now, something that we also need to discuss here is the offensive line. There's thought of Alfred Morris was going to be trade bait for either a veteran offensive lineman or something on the defensive side. So now you're having to kind of go with what you got because you don't have an option of having any trade bait because you have to have Alfred Morris, Darren McFadden, Rod Smith, and Ronnie Hillman if he probably now makes the team because of the situation. So, you know, for that offensive line, now there's a lot of pressure on you. Lyle Collins has to make sure that he keeps getting better over there at right tackle. And then, you know, you have Chaz Green already getting injured again. And then you have a Jonathan Cooper who's obviously not performed to the level that he was drafted at, a veteran in Byron Bell, and then, you know, it goes down after that. So you've got that left guard spot that was left wide open by Ronald Leary, and that could be a problem. Now, he is obviously smashed between Tyron Smith and Travis Frederick, so yeah, they can cover him a little bit. But you got two positions there on that line that are not secure, and now that puts a lot more pressure on you to make sure that you're covering, because you're going to have either a committee behind you or Alfred Morris and not Zeke, who can make plays by himself. And then you also got to make sure you protect Dak, because you're going to have defenses now go, oh, now Dak, you got to beat us. You know, either the Cowboys got to figure out a scheme to make sure that the running backs are still having holes created for them, or now it's a lot of pressure on Dak to make sure that, oh, well, we don't know if you can really throw, Dak. You got to sit there and show us that you can.
Yeah, and you're right, and that's going to be the biggest part of this year is seeing how Dak evolves from last year and going into this year and does he, you know, kind of placate to what theory is, and that's that, you know, everybody has tape on him, everybody's going to know all his tendencies, and he's not going to have a good year? Or is he going to be that one guy that maybe people still don't see a gimmick with, right? Maybe he doesn't have exactly those same tendencies that a lot of other quarterbacks have. You know, he's had a few things that, you know, kind of work for him, and that's the fact that, you know, he can pass out of the pocket, and he also has that chance to tuck and run. And so who knows, right? That's a big question this year. But that offensive line is going to be definitely put to task. People are going to want to take down that offensive line. We saw it all last year. People hated that they would be told, you can't beat this offensive line. They're the number one in the NFL. Defenses made it a point to circle Dallas on their timeline, on their schedule, and to be the best they could be against them because of that statement. So maybe, you know, they're going to do it again this year. I don't know. I know the Raiders will be definitely one of those teams they'll be looking at to do that same thing too. I think the offensive line is a little bit messed up right now because of those questions we're having. I think by the end of training camp, we'll have more of a clear picture. But, you know, it would be nice to see a trade to go get a better offensive lineman. But now the Cowboys are kind of held hostage by the running back situation. So who knows what's going to happen there. But I still think three Pro Bowlers on an offensive line, a lot of other teams would be pretty darn happy with that. I think they'd be okay.
Oh, for sure. But, Eric, you know, the biggest pressure and the biggest question the Cowboys have, not even that offensive line, is the defense. And now the Cowboys may not have this precious ball control offense that they had with Ezekiel Elliott being able to run, not to mention how many times did Ezekiel Elliott just bust through and make so many great runs. And, you know, they were having him learn how to run even better routes and run those kind of cool, you know, running back routes that we see as he casts his passes. So you're missing that element. You're missing that kind of game-breaking element that allows you to sort of control the offense, put points on the board, which are going to be very important as you're playing the Falcons, Packers, you know, some of these bigger, you know, very offensive-powered teams, especially in this window where Zeke would possibly be out. That defense, especially with that secondary where you let all the veterans walk, now they might be on defense more, and that might be a problem.
And you took the words right out of my mouth. And even with that secondary being as exposed as it is, we have this teeny little bit of a sample, and we'll say teeny because it's one game with the Hall of Fame game. How did Bruce Arians game plan? Not just to get his quarterbacks going, but okay, things are open down the middle. Things are open with these shorter routes. We can buy just enough time because with the Cowboys, their pass rushes are the greatest. So we figure, okay, we can exploit that. And then once we finish exploiting that, then we can go deep and exploit their secondary. This is a very significant double whammy because, as you said, they've got to put points on the board against a team like the Falcons. Instead of saying, okay, can we hold them to 17-20? With our defense, they could easily run up 30, 35. How is our offense going to match? And under that state of current conditions, it's flat out not.
Yeah, that's going to be difficult. So last word here on this so we can move on and talk about the trade here. How do you feel that this is going to go out? Your final say on how many games and how you think, is this peril? Like I was talking to some people and they're saying, well, the shot that the Cowboys had at being 11-5 or 10-6 and winning that division is gone now. They'll be lucky if they're even still in playoff contention. I'm saying 7-9, 8-8 if they're lucky, maybe less. Where do you guys look at it? Like, the, you know,
well, I mean, depending on, are we going by a 6-game suspension or are we going by...
How many games do you think he's going to miss, first of all? And then Second, you decide, based off of that, are the Cowboys in peril of now, you might as well give the division to somebody else, Eagles, Giants, Redskins, whatever, because Cowboys have no shot, Or do you think that they're going to be still okay with what they got and it's just plug in that committee instead of Zeke? And it might be a little more difficult, but they'll still do what was expected of them.
You know, they got a difficult, schedule here. One of the top schedules in the league, and for good reason, right? They were a really good team last year. So I think it's going to be tough for them at, some points. I'm looking at the suspension. I've been talking about the suspension a lot around people that I know, and I've always said, if the league does suspend Ezekiel Elliott for a large amount of time, it's because it's not really about them suspending him technically for that. They know appeal's coming. This is a negotiation. League's going to say, hey, six games, how about that? And the Cowboys come back with, say, zero, and they say, well, we'll meet you in the middle, maybe three, maybe four, maybe only two. I am going to go and just say that, maybe this whole thing becomes a little bit more messy, but I think maybe two games. I could see the league going back what the original thought was to the two games, making sure they get him out of that New York Giants game for sure. That way they don't have him in the opener. And then, of course, having him in that second game kind of being that next part of the punishment. I'm going to go ahead and say Cowboys 9-7. I don't think it's going to be a pretty year. I think they can still be a solid team. I think you're probably going to have the Giants maybe take the division, and which is fine with me, because I'm kind of tired of winning the division and then losing later. So,
so no, even a wild card at 9-7.
No wild card. I think they'll get in the wild card.
Okay. So, Eric, do you agree with Gary? Is it better or worse?
Half and half. Do I agree with the ending? Yes. I knew that they were going to take a step back regardless. I felt even at their peak, I'm looking at a 10-16. Now, with how the Giants are doing, how the Eagles are doing, that puts them in a three-horse race for the division. Sorry, Redskins. No. Goodbye. Get out of the way. With this, the one part that I disagree with Gary, I think it's going to be four games. Looking at the schedule and how things shake out, 500 is about the best that they're going to get. So say with a 2-2 start, that'll lead to a 9-7 finish. They just lose out on the division week 16, maybe week 17, but with how the rest of the conference shakes out, they'll sneak in as a wild card. Maybe the sixth seed, but it's something.
Yeah, I'm going to go with more towards I feel like they're going to meet somewhere in the middle and go with three or four games after the, appeal or whatever. They could even just say, there is no appeal. This is a mandatory minimum six-game thing, and you're going to serve the six games. And then he does all six. But usually with these appeals, they usually come down. So let's leave it at four and leave it there. I kind of think that I was giving the Cowboys two wins based off of Zeke being there. So I was saying that the 11-5, 10-6 range was going to be what they wound up getting with Zeke there. Because I felt like they were going to take a step back. Just with the offensive line issues. I mean, unless all those rookies come together and young guys come together and play great, which is possible. We've seen this happen before. It's not out of the realm of possibility that Rod Marinelli goes and coaches a defense to come together and all play for each other and play great. They still have the problem of not being able to rush the quarterback. That hasn't changed much. With what's going on, not to mention your best pass rusher is out for four games for a suspension of his own, David Irving. So that doesn't help the Cowboys at all either. And, that's going to cost them. And I think that without Zeke, you're losing a huge part of that offense. He was the MVP of the team last year for a good reason. And he undoubtedly helped Dak be able to have the ability to be as good as he was. last year, too. So can the Cowboys plug in a committee or plug in Alfred Morris and then and company and be okay? There, I don't think you're going to be getting the crazy Zeke yards you're getting, but you're going to be getting serviceable enough in the running game. And then it kind of just depends, again, how much pressure is Dak going to be able to live with and be able to exceed that. I feel like 8-8, 9-7 is right about where they might be, and they could possibly miss the playoffs because the Eagles may have just got better, barring injuries to some players. And, you know, the Washington is kind of the anomaly, right? How many years can Kirk Cousins really just keep betting on himself with the talent that was taken away from him in this offseason? Can they still be that good? That's a question. And the Giants are, they're obviously now the class of this division with the firepower that they have offensively, and that they are, you know, pretty damn good on the defensive side as well. So, you know, this is going to be tough. But yeah, I'm going to go with the 9 and the, I'm going to go with 8-8 and they miss the playoffs because of Zeke being out 4 games. But we'll see. Perhaps there's that element of surprise that exists.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And they can overachieve.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, once again, we're talking about this and we're kind of giving those predictions out because of Ezekiel Elliott and this whole situation going down. It's the only reason we're doing this.
Yeah, because we have our own season preview show that we're going to do. So.
Yeah, but we're just kind of predicting this for the fact of what Ezekiel Elliott did and what the league is going through right now with this whole situation. I just want to mention this one last thing before we move on and talk about this trade, you know, with the Bills and Eagles and all that. I want to say that, you know, when we talk about this situation in general, this once again is about public image with the NFL and to make it known to other players in this league, don't do this kind of stuff. Be clean. Watch Leave It to Beaver. Be like that. And then we'll all be happy and we'll have rainbows and sing songs and go down that yellow brick road. That's great. And it sounds dandy. It's not exactly the way I think reality works, though. So I hope the NFL understands that you can suspend these guys and do this kind of things, but you're going to have other programs. You're going to have to find other ways to make this work, because I don't think it's worked in the past. I don't think it's going to work now, and it's not going to work in the future. You've got to make sure that not just suspensions, but other things get put into place to make these players understand, because when you hand a 20-year-old $6 million, let's, you know, things are not always going to be pretty nice and sweet. It's going to be a little bit of a money rains all over the place.
Yeah, you wouldn't have wanted to hand 20-year-old me $6 million. I'm just going to tell you that right now.
Yeah, so that's all I'm going to say about it. I just want to close my end of this with that. I had to make that point.
So I do want to bring up that, not to keep this point going, but I'm reading something from the Dallas Morning News about this situation, and they're saying that the NFL has metadata that the Columbus Police Department did not have that verified those photos that they have, which helped their case. And may have been the reason why the Columbus Police Department did not pursue anything, because they didn't have a way to verify that those photos were, you know, in fact real, or that they were, that happened, that they basically happened when she said they happened, right? And not that they didn't happen some other time. You know, they're stating that basically the Cowboys are doing this not because they think that the NFL is being unfair to Zeke, but because they just want to find a loophole that keeps Zeke on the field. So interesting point of view from the Dallas' own papers there. And that basically they also accused the Ezekiel Elliott's attorneys of kind of just not really bringing up evidence that would have helped Zeke. Just, they were kind of trying to point out, like, oh, well, what if she fell down a bunch of stairs? There's nobody there that says, you don't have a witness that says she fell down the stairs, right? So how could you possibly know if these photos were taken when she says they were taken, or whatever? You know, they weren't really bringing up anything to kind of dispute or go against what the NFL was saying they had. So, you know, when Zeke's defense comes and says that they vow to have different evidence, if they want Zeke to stay on the field, they better have it.
Mm-hmm. No, so. I agree. I mean, it's a sticky situation. And I think all this will come to fruition, but honestly, we'll really never know everything. We'll never know the true story. So,
but can we say that Zeke kind of did need a kick in the pants?
Yeah.
I agree.
I mean, maybe not one this severe, but when you're three different things in 2 years, and that's only what was caught, I mean, mm-hmm. not good.
No, you know, you guys have brought it up, both of you did, earlier in the show, and talked about, you know, the way other teams have handled things. Hey, Jerry Jones, once again, loves his players, but he needs the love with some tough love. And, you know, if he doesn't suspend them, make them pay. And literally, make them pay for doing stupid things. Hit their pocketbook so hard that they say, oh, I can't make that dumb decision anymore. I would love to stay at the strip club and, you know, be an idiot. But you know what? Guess what, guys? I like having 3-game paychecks. So I'm not going to stay here any longer. I will see you guys later. I'm going home at, you know, 11 o'clock at night and not staying till 8 in the morning. So, I mean, I think that that's what they've got to do and make their case, you know, be known on the Cowboys side that they're not going to let players do this. As long as they buddy-buddy up with these guys, you're going to let the league do it, and they're not going to be pretty about it.
So let's move on to talking about something that's not Ezekiel Elliott here, as we spent way over an hour talking about it. And if you were here for something that wasn't Zeke talk, they're probably pissed.
I think they know this is why we're even here tonight. Otherwise, this news would be saved till next week. So
yeah, exactly. We would be talking about it on the only reason we're even talking about this, like Gary said, is because we're already here and we might as well. Because there may be not people, or people may have already had their fill of the Zeke talk and may want to hear somebody talk about something else. So this trade, which essentially wound up being a 3-team trade that really wasn't a 3-team trade because you can't do that, sends, let me get the right thing here for this, because I don't know why. Okay, so LeSean McCoy is apparently not happy about the decision. That's one thing that's not good here either, if Shady's not happy about it. But, you know, sometimes Shady's not happy about a lot of things. Anyway, so what happened here is that pretty much almost immediately after, or not immediately, I want to say like an hour after the stuff with Zeke came out, you get this tweet from Ian Rappaport saying, wow, the Bills just traded Sammy Watkins. And then about 5 minutes later, he comes with a tweet saying that they traded him to the Los Angeles Rams for cornerback E.J. Gaines and a second-round pick. And then the Rams then made a Eagles then made a trade with Buffalo to get Jordan Matthews in exchange for a pick. And then they sent Ronald Darby over to, and the Bills sent sent Darby over to the Eagles. So essentially a 3-team trade without it being a 3-team trade. So who wins out of this? I mean, Sammy Watkins can be franchise tagged next year if the Rams don't come up with money that he wants. He obviously was one of the guys that was talking big time when the NBA money was flowing around saying, we deserve to be paid more. And, you know, that doesn't go well usually with owners and everything else. And Sammy Watkins also has a lot of injury history and everything else. But this gives a big-time receiver to Jared Goff, while the Eagles get a better cornerback core than they already had, or, you know, better than the one they had. So who got the better end of this? Is Jordan Matthews isn't as good as Sammy Watkins, right? Or what do you guys think? Gary, what do you think on this?
You know, I think that, you know, Sammy Watkins is a super talented player. But who got the better end? It's almost like that I kind of look at Buffalo and the fact that they got a guy like Jordan Matthews is a more consistent player. He's a guy that I think you can depend on more. I think Watkins athletically may be better, may be able to get you more of what you want, and that's more yards, scoring, everything above. But my problem with that is he on the field to do that? No. I think Matthews has to be kind of the win here. In my opinion, because Jordan Matthews kind of proves that more than not he can be on the field. Now, he's had his own injury issues, but Sammy Watkins, he's just a walking injury at times.
The Bills also got E.J. Gaines, the corner. So they got Jordan Matthews and Gaines basically swapped a corner and a receiver for another corner and another receiver. Doesn't it feel like the Bills are saying, okay, we're going to rebuild now instead of trying to make it seem like they were going for something?
Yeah, but the Bills were in something of a rebuilding mode. Well, let's face it, they've been always in a near perpetual quasi-rebuilding mode. I mean, now for Tyrod Taylor, you have a more stable number one target, which helps him. And for Sammy Watkins, it's like, okay, you're still dealing with the guy who's still kind of learning how to throw, learning how life is in the NFL, but bright lights, big city, you stay healthy and you show out, you could potentially make even bigger money. But it's going to be a while before we determine any real winner in this three-team trade. There wasn't a three-team trade, but in just about any other league, that could have been a three-team trade.
Well, and then, I mean, I think also this helps the Rams receiving core, right? In that you got, what, Cooper Kupp, Tavon Austin. Robert Woods over there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Robert Woods was on the same team as Sammy Watkins at one point. So you have Watkins who now can just be the guy that bombs down and you throw to him long. You have a possession guy. You have the younger guys that can make the big plays in Kupp and Austin. Obviously now Jared Goff has better weapons. But will he excel enough to be able to use them is the situation. Isn't there a possibility that maybe Goff doesn't improve in his second year and it just frustrates Sammy Watkins?
Easily. And let's see how things are with the Rams if that happens.
You know, you got to feel for Sammy Watkins for the fact that, you know, he's really lacked a solid quarterback, a guy that's a high caliber. But, you know, I still say, you know, he's not without his own demons and his own inadequacies. So, I mean, it is what it is, you know. Hopefully for his sake, he's able to do more.
I think also this helps the Eagles because there's a lot of talk about Nelson Aguilar has been improving leaps and bounds. He now gets to become the number one receiver there and allows for their younger guys to sort of take up spots that Aguilar was taking and that Jordan Matthews obviously had as well. And then you improve, and this is the big one for the Eagles because their defensive backs you know, Jalen Mills, Patrick Robinson, Ron Brooks. I don't know that you're really saying, okay, those are just the big caliber corners that are going to be able to defend the likes of Dez Bryant, Odell Beckham, Brandon Marshall, Jordan Reed, all that all year. You bring in a Ronald Darby who was equally just as good as Stephon Gilmore, and he has 2 years left on his contract, on his rookie deal. So, and he was the Defensive Rookie of the Year in 2015. So that automatically improves your defense while allowing one of your receivers that you drafted in 2015 to shine as well. Do you think it's going to work out like that, though, for the Eagles?
My gut's telling me possibly no, but again, with everything meshing like this, for me, it's way too soon to tell.
Yeah, it's really tough, you know, and you got to remember, you know, cornerbacks are, you know, lucky in the fact that when they come into a situation, they just have to be told, cover that guy. Okay, do what you know, do what you can. And, you know, Darby coming in and doing his thing, you know, maybe he works out well with these other guys, but it's, you know, not, he's not going to become a game changer for the entire defense. There's going to be other weapons out there. So he can do his job, but, you know, let's be honest. I mean, he's never, I hate to be this way, but he's not been the guy in Buffalo that has made everybody say, oh man, he's one of the reasons why Buffalo wins games.
Fair enough. I do think that he improves them a little bit, but obviously, again, you have to see how he messes with the defensive scheme, everything else. And then also Aguilar, you also have to see in regular season when he's playing, you know, the top defenses, what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so a couple more questions here before we end this. Now Buffalo has 2 picks in the first 3 rounds next year. In each of the first 3 rounds, 2 picks in each of those. So 2 first round, 2 second round, 2 third round. Not too bad if you're Buffalo.
Not at all. And you know what? And they can go at it a multitude of ways. They can start building and fix some of the positions that maybe has been, you know, lacking. Or maybe they, you know, put a few picks together and maybe move up in the draft and go get them a guy they really want. Maybe we're talking about a quarterback that, you know, they feel like could be the future of their franchise, or maybe address some other positions that, you know, can do what they can to get to where they want to be. And, you know, sometimes I kind of go with, you know, quantity. I think quality is great, but if you can help your team in many positions, especially at having those high draft picks in the first 3 rounds, sometimes you just need to stay where you're at and go ahead and build your team. And I think maybe Buffalo should go that route personally. But, hey, if there's a quarterback out there that is definitely the guy and you really feel like he's going to do something, go for it.
Well, you know, too bad we don't have him on the show anymore, but our dear friend Randy, the Jets fan, maybe you need to be watching out because the Bills could be making a run for one of these quarterbacks that's going to come out next year, and everybody's been just talking him up about, oh, what a great quarterback class everybody's waiting around tanking for. If you're the Bills, Eric, is this where you're going? Does Tyrod Taylor need to worry about, I may not have a job after this season if these trades don't pan out and we just keep hitting the bottom?
No, because I really don't see this upcoming quarterback class is that great. I mean, yes, if Sam Darnold does become available, leaves USC, that's one thing, but you've got a guy that you've already been trying to develop, and he's shown flashes of talent. You're going to sit and throw those couple of years away for what could be another guess? You're doing yourself a disservice. I mean, You start with,
I mean, Buffalo did trade Cardale Jones, so they don't really have anybody behind Taylor.
Well, true, but look at what's happened even with when they've had veteran quarterbacks that are at least somewhat capable. Yes, they had Kyle Orton for a season, nearly got to the playoffs. Yes, they had Ryan Fitzpatrick. That worked well for 1 year out of two, but you don't want to throw away commitment for making another commitment and risking failure again. Yes, rebuilding takes time, but you speed up the process if you keep certain things that you already have.
True. You aren't wrong in that. Obviously, it's better to be able to stick with the person that knows things about your offense and everything else and not have to teach it to a new guy. But mm-hmm. if you think that the new guy is supremely more talented or has the potential to be, then you got to make that decision, right? But, you know, like Gary said, they could just go decide to do the Browns route and just pick people at every position and you fill six needs. You know, or just have six guys that could be really great for your team in the future, just like they did in the, you know, previous couple of years as well. So let's see. That's obviously, you got to wait for the draft for that. But will Sammy Watkins get paid by the Rams, or is he getting franchise tagged?
Well, it also depends on his health. I think Sammy Watkins stays relatively healthy this year, and him and Jared Goff kind of find some chemistry and start to really work well together. I think he gets his payday. I think, really honestly, the Rams will see him as their top guy. I know Tavon Austin's been there, but, you know, Tavon Austin's also got a route that he needs to go to prove he deserves big money as well. So, yeah, I could definitely see Sammy Watkins getting big money. But, you know, it's up to him, and it's also up to his body, because if he gets injured again this year, I think the guys in the world of hurt, I think he's going to be very disappointed with his next payday.
Yeah, I completely agree. If he can stay healthy, really build a rapport with Goff that Goff needs, and says, hey, I can develop and be your number one target, goes out there and plays like it, money in the bank. But if he can't live up to something like that, then at best he can still be franchise tagged.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is too, like Gary said, if he gets injured and is out for a significant amount of time, that really hurts the amount of money that you can sit there and ask for. So he needs to make sure that he stays healthy and stays on that field. He has another long-term injury, he's going to be really not happy about the money that he could wind up getting from the Rams or from anybody else, for that matter. Finally, we did get the news that Ryan Tannehill has decided to go ahead and take the surgery, leaving the door open for Jay Cutler to presumably take the starting job for the Miami Dolphins, barring an injury to himself, or, you know, Matt Moore just lighting it up to the point where they say, oh, I don't know. But Adam Gase has already said that Jay Cutler didn't come here to sit on the sidelines. They're not paying him $10 million to sit around. Gary, I mean, you know, you don't, I mean, I live here in Miami, so I have to hear a lot of this. How do you feel about this whole thing with Jay Cutler? And does he have the potential to maybe do just as much as Tannehill did? I mean, Tannehill wasn't, he was improving, obviously. He was getting better, but he, I don't think he ever realized his full potential either.
You know, it's funny, you know, Tannehill making the decision that he's going to have the surgery, and, you know, he's got to really, but, you know, having that all come to fruition, it's a tough thing, and he's going to have to sit here and watch another guy quarterback his team this year and kind of really sit there and be bummed out because he was really expecting to have some good things go for him this year. So I feel for the guy, but if I'm Ryan Tannehill also, am I concerned? Not really. Like, I think Jay Cutler, has proven he can have some really great moments, but I still am concerned about Jay Cutler's psyche. What Jay Cutler are we going to get week in and week out? Are we going to get this Jay Cutler that, you know, played in Denver and really impressed people? Or are we going to have the guy in Chicago who kind of takes a week off when he's thinking about Dunkin' Donuts over playing football? That's the thing. And I still have concerns about that. And him coming fresh out of the, you know, training to be an announcer and all that stuff, and maybe not having, you know, football being the number one thing in his life besides talking about it, I have some concerns. But, I mean, who knows? This guy could come out and prove me wrong. I just don't know that if I'm Tannehill, I'm scared that he's going to steal my job.
Well, Eric, we talked about this already, but you have an interesting take on what this could mean for Tannehill.
I really do, and don't get me wrong, I like Dunkin' Donuts. I just wish those monster drinks, as delicious as they are, weren't almost $5, because what the hell are you doing, Dunkin' Donuts? But anyways, as far as with this situation, looking at a lot of key numbers, looking at history, while I don't think Cutler is going to be the man beyond this season, he's going to be a stopgap. I think we've seen the last of Ryan Tannehill as a Miami Dolphin. This is now another significant injury, season ending, and this was really his one chance to get momentum and to finally spend multiple seasons improving as a starting quarterback. That's done. Now, this year, obviously, he's still going to be around, still going to get paid. His cap hit is almost $25 million. After this season, that's cut by 80%. And you're looking at the numbers, you're looking at the history, and you're saying, okay, we may not need Jay Cutler beyond the 2017 season going into 2018. We may decide to get another free agent or maybe get lucky with the pick deeper in the draft, but we'd only be losing $5 million getting rid of Tannehill. And the one chance that he had to provide a whole bunch for us, even though, yes, he took us to the playoffs, Chad Pennington took us to a division title. What does that tell you? So, is it bad of a way that you would see him going out? I feel bad for him, but I think with a lot of things, he's done. And come 2018, if another team takes a chance on him, you may see him around in a different uniform, but it ain't going to be teal. Or aqua, rather.
Yeah. You know, that is a really interesting take. And, you know, a guy that they really have invested a lot of money and time in that, you know, they were hoping for some big things out of, for them to say, you know what, you know, it's time to move on. It really does interest me. And it makes me wonder what their thought processes are when it comes to the future and where they would go to get that next guy. And, you know, I think there would have to definitely be some clear paths for them to go get that next quarterback for that franchise before they made that decision. But, you know, like you're saying, not taking a huge cap hit to move on past him and find somebody that maybe they feel can stay a little bit more healthy and upright. Because, you know, once again, we keep talking about injuries with these guys. If you're a guy that gets injured every year, or maybe you have lingering injuries all the time, teams are just not ready to, you know, be you know, involved with you as much as they would if, you know, they saw a lot of success and you had a few injuries here and there. So Tannehill has not yet met the level that they would want and be able to be okay with him being injured like that. So that's a good argument. I'm really interested to see now how they do go out of this and coming into next year, find out where they're at.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're not going to want to pin their hopes on a 35-year-old quarterback like Jay Cutler, but we have seen lots of quarterbacks, you know, Carson Palmer's what, 38? We're seeing quarterbacks kind of play a little bit older. And if, you know, Jay Cutler under Adam Gase, a guy he had a really pretty good season with, goes and overachieves, I wouldn't get past it that perhaps Cutler sticks around. You know?
So, if he does stick around, I would like to see a much more incentive-laden contract than this current one, because while I'm happy that the highest it could be is $13 million, I don't like the base of $10 million. Not for him.
Well, if he outperforms that contract, there's no way you can give him less.
I'm not saying giving him less. I'm just saying, okay, go out there and keep doing it. Get yourself in shape. Keep yourself out of the house so your wife doesn't annoy you or vice versa. And oh, by the way, you do this and you keep doing this, you keep your head in the game instead of being aloof, you can make all this money. If you don't, then you're not.
Yep, true that. It's going to be now a lot of people are going to be watching the Dolphins, I think, that weren't watching them before, just to see Jay Cutler pass or fail, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. That's so true.
So a lot of eyes are going to be on Miami that perhaps weren't before, and I guess you got to take that in stride if you're Stephen Ross and everybody else, as far as people wanting to cover them more. So living in the area or living close to the area, as Eric and I do, we don't really have to deal with that. There's already tons of Dolphins talk as it is. But, yeah, it's going to be kind of fun to watch this this season, honestly. I think the Miami Dolphins might have actually become more fun to talk about and watch, because any and everything that Jay Cutler does now is going to be put under the microscope. And now the Dolphins front office is going to be put under the microscope, too.
Yeah, I need some interesting and fun to talk about other than getting my hopes up and being miserable, because I already have one team that takes care of that need.
Yeah, Jaguars are the kings of doing that. So, all right, we talked way longer than I thought we were. So I'm sorry if, again, you were not wanting to hear about Zeke talk for like an hour and 10 minutes. But, hey, it happens. You're in conversation. You're talking about things. It's kind of hard sometimes to just go, okay, we're going to just be done talking about when there's more topics to explore about something that's kind of a big deal right now. And, of course, the big trade and other things. So if you enjoyed what you heard here, just to let you know, we do have two shows a week. Normally they are on Monday nights right after the Monday Night Football game ends when it's the regular season. But right now it's preseason, and we're just doing them Monday nights around when it turns around midnight Eastern or so. So into the Tuesday morning, it'll show up Tuesday morning on demand for you. Same thing Thursdays after Thursday Night Football around the midnight Eastern. So it'll show up Friday morning on demand for you. We do have Game Pass here. So we are going to do it. You know, if you haven't heard, we talked about some preseason games on Thursday. So you can go check out that show. And what are we talking about? Most of the preseason games from the weekend on the Tuesday morning show. So you want to, you know, listen for how players have performed over week one of the preseason, who looks good, who doesn't, heading into week two. I'm just happy to be able to talk about football that's on the field again. I know we talked about a lot of off the field stuff on this show, on this episode in particular, but I'm glad that we can also focus on the field stuff. And that season is a month away now. Exactly a month away.
The doldrums are officially over.
Yes. Oh, thank God.
Fantasy is... Yeah, and if you already had your fantasy draft, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
This is why you don't have fantasy drafts during week one of the preseason. But, you know, some people got to get them done early.
Normally, this is around the time when I would have had it, but between me running around like a chicken with its head cut off and a whole bunch of other chaos, I haven't scheduled it yet. So, yeah, it's kind of win for me this year.
But all right, until we are back on the Monday night, Tuesday morning episode, We'll see you later, everybody.
Peace.
Later.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.